I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. The Israeli Army Chief said on Wednesday the military is preparing for a possible ground operation in Lebanon. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
A Reuters camera captured the moment an Israeli airstrike hit a target in the coastal Lebanese city of Tyre on Wednesday. Israel has widened its airstrikes in Lebanon against Iranian-backed Hezbollah militants. In a video released by the Israeli military, the country's army chief told troops the strikes were meant to prepare for a possible ground operation. Even as he spoke, high-level diplomats pushed to stop the fighting in both Gaza and Lebanon. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
We've been working tirelessly with partners to avoid a full-blown war.
Israeli airstrikes have targeted Hezbollah leaders and hit hundreds of sites deep inside Lebanon. Lebanese hospitals have filled with the wounded since Monday. Hezbollah rocket fire since October has forced hundreds of thousands of Israelis to flee the border region. Israeli authorities said northern Israel was hit by heavy Hezbollah barrages on Wednesday morning.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. Russian President Vladimir Putin said on Wednesday any nation's conventional attack on Russia that is supported by a nuclear power will be considered a joint attack on his country. The strong new warning to the West was outlined in a revision of Moscow's nuclear doctrine. The threat was clearly aimed at discouraging the West from allowing Ukraine to strike Russia with longer-range weapons and appears to significantly lower the threshold for the possible use of Russia's nuclear arsenal. This is VOA News. Former U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday described Ukraine in bleak terms, raising questions about how much he'd be willing to concede in a negotiation over the country's future. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Ukraine is gone.
Trump argues Ukraine should have made concessions to Vladimir Putin before Russia's 2022 invasion.
Any deal, even the worst deal, would have been better than what we have right now.
While Trump has long railed against U.S. backing for Ukraine, he's rarely discussed the conflict in such detail as he did during a North Carolina appearance. And as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky set to pitch the White House this week on what he calls a victory plan.
What deal can we make? It's demolished.
During an event with Zelensky hours later, President Biden sounded the opposite tone.
Mr. President, we all stand by your side.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
South African officials say the remains of 49 freedom fighters who died while exiled in Zimbabwe and Zambia during the struggle against white minority rule in South Africa have been returned to the country. The bodies were received on Wednesday by government officials and family members at a military base in the capital Pretoria after being exhumed in Zambia and Zimbabwe for reburial in the country of their birth. South Africa is planning a massive mouse eradication project on a sub-Antarctic island to stop an invasive species from wiping out precious seabirds that nest there. Kate Bartlett reports.
Marion Island in the southern Indian Ocean, almost 2,000 kilometers from Cape Town, is a remote and windswept South African territory that's home to extensive bird life, including the wandering albatross. But those birds face an unusual threat, predatory mice that have been feasting on their chicks.
The mice were introduced accidentally in the early 1800s, so some 200 years ago now. They came ashore, they were essentially stowaways on the vessels of the early seal hunters that visited the island.
That was Anton Wolfart, a conservationist who's leading the program to eradicate the mice. A similar project has been undertaken before. In the 1940s, feral cats were introduced to Marion Island to try and control the mice, but then the felines started preying on the seabirds. The cats were successfully eradicated in the early 1990s, although that, of course, left the mice to flourish. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barkley, Washington. Today is Thursday, September 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Biden plans to visit Africa this year.
Coming as it does at the very tail end of his administration, without much to, I think, really celebrate in terms of his involvement in Africa, I think the visit will ring rather hollow.
A report says increasing women in the workforce and promoting their economic participation could boost Africa's GDP. VOA gains rare access to the war-damaged Sudanese city of Omdurman. Ghanaian President Akufo-Addo says military coups in West Africa are a threat to democratic progress in the region. We'll have analysis of day two of the 79th session of the UN General Assembly. DRC President Tshisekedi calls for targeted sanctions on Rwanda for destabilizing his country.
The United Nations has published reports blaming Rwanda for the destabilization that's happening in the, you know, eastern DRC. The question is whether by him discussing this publicly is going to help the process of resolution or hurt it.
And Harris and Trump campaign seek to mobilize voters in the swing state of Georgia. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Joe Biden is turning to Africa in the sunset of his presidency. He is spaced one day in front of world leaders. He elevated Sudan's conflict to a priority in front of world leaders, announced he will travel to Angola, and endorsed adding two seats for African countries to the UN Security Council. VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from New York.
Blink, and he might have missed it. In his valedictory speech to the United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday, President Joe Biden made several brief overtures to the African continent, reminding world leaders of the evils of South Africa's apartheid regime, calling for an end to Sudan's grueling conflict, and citing urgency in combating an mpox outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. But these two short lines may have the most weight.
The UN needs to adapt and bring new voices and new perspectives. That's why we support reforming and expanding the membership of the UN Security Council.
For years, African leaders have called for a seat at this table. But critics point out that Washington does not support a critical part of Security Council membership, veto power. Cameron Hudson, a senior fellow in the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, says African nations are puzzled by Biden's stance.
So this is really, I think, an unfinished project of his, probably more words than reality, quite frankly. The fact that he has caveated this announcement by saying that Africans shouldn't get the veto when they do and if they do get permanent seats on the Security Council, frankly, has left Africans scratching their heads.
John Fortier, a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, said it matters that Biden use this platform to call for an end to Sudan's raging 17-month conflict, but doubts whether that call will provoke action.
This is one that of conflicts that is serious, but has not been getting world attention. And I think his pointing to it is really to elevate it in world consciousness, but not yet to really know how we're going to see an end to this.
And Biden's announcement that he will visit Angola next month allows him to keep his promise to visit the continent. But again, Hudson wondered how this long-delayed visit will actually land.
Coming as it does at the very tail end of his administration, without much to, I think, really celebrate in terms of his involvement in Africa, I think the visit will ring rather hollow.
Biden has 4 months left in his presidency. Can he use that time to convince the world's fastest-growing continent that these are more than just well-meaning words? Anita Powell, VOA News, New York.
Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo says military coups in West Africa are a threat to democratic progress in the region, has worked hard to achieve. But he says Ghana remains resolute in its commitment to democracy. Ghanaians will vote in parliamentary and presidential elections in December 2024. Speaking Wednesday to the 79th UN General Assembly, President Akufo-Addo said his administration will make sure that the elections are free, fair, and transparent.
Madam President, as I speak today, ongoing developments in West Africa are deeply troubling. Military coups in Mali, Guinea, Burkina Faso, and Niger threaten the democratic progress we have worked so hard to achieve within the ECOWAS community. These coups are stark reminders that democracy is indeed fragile and must be continually nurtured. In Ghana, however, we will remain resolute in our commitment to democracy. As my presidency draws to a close, I want to assure this assembly that the upcoming 2024 elections in Ghana will be free, fair, and transparent. Ghanaians have demonstrated time and again in the last 3 decades their strong attachment to democracy, which they will not permit to be undermined. The Electoral Commission, supported by Ghana's security services, is well equipped to ensure that the will of the Ghanaian people is respected. Ghana has long been a beacon of democracy in Africa, and we intend to keep it that way. The 2024 elections will be proof of our enduring adherence to the rule of law, transparency, and the principles of democratic accountability that have guided our nation in recent decades.
That was Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo speaking yesterday at the ongoing 79th UN General Assembly in New York. Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi has called for the immediate withdrawal of Rwandan troops from the DRC. He also calls for targeted sanctions on Rwanda for what he calls its policy of destabilizing his country. President Tshisekedi has accused Rwanda of supporting the M23 rebels operating in eastern DRC. Kigali has also accused Kinshasa of supporting the ethnic Hutu FDLR rebels. Both countries are currently involved in the so-called Luanda peace process. Addressing the 79th session of the UN General Assembly through an interpreter Wednesday, President Tshisekedi said the DRC is committed to peace but wants to preserve its sovereignty.
Mr. President, the situation in the east of the Democratic Republic of the Congo is particularly concerning. The resurgence of the M23 terrorist group supported by Rwanda has caused an unprecedented humanitarian crisis with close to 7 million internally displaced persons. This aggression is a major violation of our national sovereignty. We call upon the international community to firmly condemn these actions and to impose targeted sanctions against Rwanda for its destabilizing and damaging role. We demand an immediate and unconditional withdrawal of Rwandan troops from our territory. While recent diplomatic initiatives such as the Luanda talks may be encouraging, they should certainly not overshadow how urgent it is to engage in this essential action. The Democratic Republic of Congo is utterly committed to entrenching lasting peace in the east of the country and to promote economic development and the well-being of these so long-suffering communities experiencing this armed conflict. Nevertheless, we are not closing any door to any opportunity that would bring peace while maintaining our sovereignty and our territorial integrity.
President Felix Tshisekedi of the Democratic Republic of Congo addressed in the 79th session of the UN General Assembly, speaking through an interpreter on Wednesday. A political analyst says Rwanda should level up with the international community about its alleged involvement in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC, to make negotiations easier. This after DRC President Felix Tshisekedi on Wednesday appealed to the international community for targeted sanctions on Rwanda for what he calls its policy of destabilizing the DRC. Meanwhile, Kweku Nuama, a professor in the School of International Service at American University in Washington, D.C., tells me that West African leaders must do more to deliver services to their people to minimize the number of military coups in the region.
The problem with the coups in West Africa is that the democratic system hasn't delivered for a lot of people in West Africa. And so when Akufo-Addo is talking about coups, he has to understand that coups don't happen in a vacuum. democratic governments have to deliver services to their people. So when they fail on that front, they give military adventurers excuses to seize power. And that's what's happening with South Africa. So we all have to celebrate the good stories that's coming out of places like Liberia, where we've seen a successful transition to democracy, or even Ghana, where in spite of all of its troubles, democracy has not really faltered. But we also have to be cognizant of the fact that just because you're a democracy doesn't mean that that's the end of the story. You have to deliver services.
Let's talk about President Felix Tshisekedi of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The conflict in eastern Congo is putting Rwanda and Democratic Republic of Congo against each other. What's your take on what President Tshisekedi is saying, blaming Rwanda for the troubles in eastern Congo?
So I know some may say that he shouldn't be saying these kinds of things at a place like the United Nations General Assembly, but I think it's the proper forum to bring this up because, first of all, everybody in that room knows what's happening in the region because the United Nations has published reports on it, blaming Rwanda for the destabilization that's happening in the, you know, Eastern DRC. So this is no secret. The question is whether by him discussing this publicly, is going to help the process of resolution or hurt it. There's already a mediation session going on led by Angola. The ECA is also doing some kind of intervention in that region. But I think that this is still the proper forum. Put Rwanda on notice that everybody knows what's happening over there. They've been denying it. But there's evidence. The UN itself has established the fact that Rwanda is behind these rebels. Now, Rwanda may have an excuse. And I want Rwanda to step forward and defend itself. And that defense largely goes to the fact that the DRC government has been unable to control Rwandan militias who operate from its territory and destabilize neighboring Rwanda. So there is something going on in that area.
Rwanda, I think, has stepped forward by blaming the DRC government for its support of the FDLR rebels in eastern Congo.
Yes, but they are denying supporting the M23. Which has been established. So you have to admit it. You have to say we're supporting them because we think that you are also supporting the rebels against us. And then we can have an honest discussion.
Kweku Nwama is the professor in the School of International Service at American University here in Washington, D.C. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 26th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A report commissioned by the MasterCard Foundation says that increasing women's participation in Africa's formal workforce could boost the continent's economy by approximately $287 billion by 2030, boosting GDP by 5%. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Inclusion of more women in African economies can unlock $287 billion within 6 years, according to the report by the MasterCard Foundation in collaboration with the McKinsey and Company consulting firm. The report is titled Young Women in Africa, Agents of Economic Growth and Transformation by 2030, released last week. The document examines the impact, challenges, and contributions of women in the African labor force. The report says young women are important contributors to the African economy, and their increased participation in the daily activities of different sectors of the economy could raise the GDP by 5 percentage points. The trend, however, has been in the other direction. The report notes that women's contribution to Africa's GDP declined from 18% in 2000 to just 11% in 2022. Marguerita Bagulo is one of the millions of women employed in and contributing to the growth of African economies. She works as a customer service representative for a company in Ghana. She says her company promotes gender equality and that women fight for their jobs.
I would like you to have a place where your gender is not really a problem, right? And I think it's great because we are given the same opportunities that our male counterparts are being given. And so in turn, that gives us the opportunity to stand up for ourselves and better ourselves in order to compete on the same level as our male counterparts.
In Namibia, despite government policies aimed at increasing women's participation in the economic sector, their participation rate has risen only to 2 points, 40% to 42% over a five-year period, according to the report. The report notes some 10 African countries, most of them from Eastern and Western Africa, have the potential to achieve faster economic growth if they create and prioritize gender equality. However, persistent obstacles continue to keep many women out of the labor force. Wahu Muredi is an entrepreneur in Kenya. Muredi says she could not continue with her hair product business due to family commitments.
Business is hard generally for everyone, man and woman. But I think a woman has a bigger challenge because sometimes even looking for business opportunities, you are trading favors, sexual favors, instead of just doing work. But I think my biggest one has been balancing, trying to be mom and dad and at the same time being entrepreneur. I felt like I was losing on the parenting because I'm busy with meetings all the time.
Muredi has returned to a university to pursue further studies to better her life and that of her family. Samuel Nyandemu is a lecturer on economics at the University of Nairobi. He says more girls and women are enrolling in universities to increase their chances of joining the labor force, which is dominated by men.
I think what mostly are doing, they are on the hospitality industry. Some are in the managerial sector. In any case, you can see now when it comes to enrollment even in universities, the number is now increasing. That means in terms of job skills, they are really acquiring a lot of job skills within the African economies.
The MasterCard Foundation says private sector-led approaches, such as investing in after-school care led by young women, could create 3.2 million jobs. The researchers say women also need government-funded initiatives to expand centers to improve childcare initiatives. The MasterCard Foundation plans to invest $360 million to help more than 70,000 young women and girls complete their education, start businesses, and find job opportunities. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
In Omdurman, Sudan's second most populous city, the once thriving market has been all but destroyed by almost a year and a half of war. VOA gained rare access to the city and met residents who recalled its former glory as fighting raged in the capital, Khartoum, on the opposite bank of the Nile. Henry Wilkins reports.
Omdurman Market, the shopping hub for the Khartoum metropolitan area, as seen in March 2023, full of people and full of life. Fast forward to September 2024, total devastation caused by almost 18 months of war in Sudan. Faris Mustafa fled the city when the war started. He's returning to the market for the first time.
In the past, it wasn't easy to be here because of the overcrowding. All the shops were open. All the shops were filled with goods. All our mothers and sisters were here. I mean, the Sudanese community gathered here. Honestly, the war has changed us Sudanese. It's a test from God.
Since the war began in April 2023, the Sudanese government has barred entry to many international journalists. But in September, VOA gained rare access to Omdurman, which is now controlled by the Sudanese Armed Forces, or SAF. Gunfire and shelling can be heard directed towards positions in Khartoum, held by the opposing paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF. Less than 4 kilometers away, the owner of this cosmetics store declined to give his name out of fear for his safety. He says shopkeepers were getting ready for a major holiday when the war broke out.
All of the shops were affected. The shooting and chaos started around 2 days before the festival of Eid. People were operating normally and had their Eid products ready to sell.
A year and a half later, analysts say Sudan's war is at a stalemate. Peace talks have repeatedly stalled. Rights groups and the U.S. government accused both sides of war crimes. Just across the River Nile from here is RSF-controlled territory, which is inaccessible to most journalists. Those who have escaped say the destruction there is even worse. The UN says the territory is likely suffering from famine, the world's first in 7 years, but it's unable to confirm it due to lack of access. Mustafa says he just wants the war to end and life to return to normal for the people of Sudan.
May God compensate them, and people should not despair. God willing, one day we will return, and we will rebuild our country and rebuild Sudan, God willing.
Many civilians VOA spoke to shared this hope. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Omdurman, Sudan.
South African officials say the remains of 49 freedom fighters who died while exiled in Zimbabwe and Zambia during the struggle against white minority rule in South Africa have been returned to the country. The Associated Press, AP, says the bodies were received Wednesday by government officials and family members at the Waterkloof Air Force Base in the capital, Pretoria, after being exhumed in Zambia and Zimbabwe for their reburial in the country of their birth. Early voting for the presidential election in the southern state of Georgia begins October 15. Polls show a close contest there between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. VOA's Ken Fairbaugh has more from Atlanta.
Georgia Governor Brian Kemp and vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance shared the stage at a recent dinner, a show of Republican Party unity, after years of discord between Kemp and former President Donald Trump.
We're going to start all over.
Atlanta voter Dorothy Harp is not concerned about Trump's feud with Kemp over the 2020 election, which Trump falsely says he won in Georgia. She's more concerned about the economy.
We had lower prices on our food, gas, energy. Because everything was better under Trump administration.
It's a message Harp takes door to door, encouraging members of her community to vote.
And I've got a lot of young voters who said they're going to vote for Trump.
In the 2020 election, Joe Biden defeated Trump in Georgia by just over 11,000 votes out of nearly 5 million cast. Numbers Georgia's Republican Governor Kemp knows well, as he implored audience members, including Harp, to vote.
So we cannot take anything for granted. We cannot take our foot off the gas.
Georgia is fully in play again.
Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens, a Democrat, says polls show another close race this year between Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris.
People sometimes get disenfranchised by thinking that their vote doesn't matter, but we have to go out there and make sure everyone knows that their vote does matter.
Listen, every vote counts.
Elijah Grace is with the voter advocacy organization, the New Georgia Project Action Fund, whose workers go door to door to promote voter registration.
We specialize in targeting black and brown people across the state, making sure that they have all the resources that's needed to cast their ballot.
A 2020 Pew Research Center study showed Georgia's eligible black voting population made up a third of the state's total electorate. Exit polls in 2020 showed 88% of black voters chose Biden. But recent polls show Democrats losing ground in this close contest.
Both sides understand that roads lead through Georgia.
When the race was between Biden and Trump, Grace noticed a lack of enthusiasm among potential voters.
And since the Democratic ticket has changed, we have seen a strong uptick in support for Vice President Kamala Harris.
She's at the intersection of color and gender.
Bernice King, daughter of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., believes Harris appeals to voters previously considering sitting on the sidelines.
Frankly, just speaking as a woman, you know, I think this is the season where we're seeing more and more women emerge in the critical places of leadership.
Leadership is motivating Harp to back Trump, and she's working to bring others along with her as Republicans focus on inflation and cost of living concerns.
I have already committed to taking some of the people I know to the polls. I said, if you ain't got a way to get there, I'll get you there.
Polls open in Georgia for early voting on October 15th. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Atlanta.
And that's it for this Thursday, September 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barkley, Washington State. Have a great day, but please be safe whatever you do.